Good to have you all here this morning. We appreciate you participating in the service. It's great to see Sister Jewel here. We've missed her for several services. I have to tell you, I'm a lot younger than she is, but when I fall, it's a serious operation. Sometimes it is a serious operation, so we certainly have missed her in her time of not being with us. I want you to start with me in Genesis chapter 6. I want to talk this morning about a case study in the patience of God. And I want to begin with the fact that we have knowledge, have information that God sometimes runs out of patience. And we're going to talk about why that happens. I will tell you, I've lived on this earth long enough, and I told you a few weeks ago about my job at Dow Chemical. I worked around a lot of people that I would call agnostic. Agnostic meaning maybe there is a God, maybe there's not a God. It doesn't make any difference to me one way or the other. Whether there is or isn't a God, it'll have no impact on my life. That's a little bit different than people that are atheists who absolutely believe there's no God and will fight and argue with you. There are plenty of people, however, that believe that God has unlimited patience with the human race and with them in particular. You hear this quite often when somebody says, well, you know, I'm so busy right now at work, I just don't have enough time to go to church, but once I get retired, Rick, you better believe I'm going to fire you. Just watch my smoke once I get retired. Oh, when I get this new job, once I get off shift work. Then what that says is they believe that God will be as patient with them as they need for him to be. Well, I'm just not ready right now. But I'm going to tell you that throughout the Bible, there's huge amounts of data that indicate God's patience wears out. It oftentimes wears thin and sometimes wears out. And when it happens, it's quite clear over the course of time. Do you know multiple times in the New Testament, we are told that a person, as an example, Hebrews chapter 6, verses 4 through 6, that says, it is impossible to renew one to salvation. Well, why is that? Because God's patience has worn out with that person. When you begin taking a look at the first time that God made the decision to destroy the world, in Genesis chapter 6, it was because his patience wore out. You can see in 1 Peter chapter 3, we're going to touch on that exact phrase occurs. Why did God destroy the entire world except for 8 people? Because his patience had run out. I want to give you a little bit of information. If you were to take a look at the biblical age of the earth is about 6,000 years. Now, I just got back, Linda and I did, from going to a number of places up in the hill country. We went to Pardinalis Falls, and some of you have been to the Wonder Cave, and you've been to all these places up there, Hamilton Pool, Jacob's Well. And they'll tell you, well, this rock is 300 million years old, and this rock's 100 million years old, and this rock is 50 million years old. Two things I'll tell you about that. When you look in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, it says to us that the world was formless and void, you can see in the verse 2nd, and that darkness was over the surface of the deep. Now, exactly how long, if somebody wants to guess, how long was this globe that we call Earth of dirt and rock covered with water? And you want to guess it's 100 million years? You can guess it's 100 million or 500 million. Some years ago, Linda and I were in Wonder Cave, and this young lady, she was a little out of college maybe, and she was saying, now this is 30 million and this is 50 million. And I happened to be the first headed down the stairs, and she said, sir, will you get that light switch? And I said, yes, and this is a 30 million year old light switch. And everybody laughed. And she said, I think the electricity was put in after the cave. Now, the simple fact of the matter is, if you do the study in the Bible, you'll see that the world's about 6,000 years old. And there's Dr. John Morris, who is the head of creation studies, Philip Morris, has a great book called The Age of the Earth. And it is a great study. I will tell you that the flood occurred around 2400 years B.C. So what you can see is the world was created about 4,000. So in 1600 years, there was a lot of people. In what is known oftentimes as the antediluvial world, the world before the flood, people lived to be 900 plus years of age, and they bore children for 750 to 800 years. So there were a lot of people on the earth. So when you begin looking at Genesis chapter 6 and verse 3, The Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever because he is flesh. Nevertheless, his days shall be 120 years. From the time that the Lord said this to Noah, there was going to be 120 years before he would destroy the world. Verse 5, you want to know exactly when God's patience ran out? He's going to tell you very clearly. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thought of his heart was only evil continually. That's when God drew the line. When he looked on this earth, and I don't care if there were a million people or 10 million people, he says every thought and every intent of every person's heart was only evil continually. So he made the decision. Two things were going to happen, as you see in 2 Peter, 1 and 2 Peter. Number one, he was going to save the remnant, which God always did. He took Noah and Mrs. Noah and the three little Noahs and their wives, and he put them on the ark, and he destroyed everything else. So it was about two things. It was about punishing those who were evil, but about saving the ones that were righteous. When you look in verse 6, he says, and the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth and was grieved in his heart. And the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I created from the face of the land, from man to animal to creeping things to birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them. The flood wasn't about just killing mankind. It was about killing every single thing that breathed breath with its nostrils. That's a good study in time when you think about the ecosystem. When you begin taking a look at 1 Peter chapter 3, he makes a point. Now I want you to turn there with me for just a moment. In 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter uses this example twice in 1 Peter and in 2 Peter. So in 1 Peter chapter 3, he talks about baptism being corresponding to the flood. In what way? Because a baptism was a separation. It was the separating of the righteous from the unrighteous. But in verse 19, he says, in which he went and made proclamations to spirits in prison who once were disobedient when the patience of God kept waiting in the day of Moses during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely through the water. The 120 years that you see here was about God's patience. He was going to allow, once he made this decision and told Noah, I'm going to wait 120 years. I will give you the chance to build the ark and to talk to as many people as you could. People will say, he wasn't very successful. How many people do you know saved their entire family? He did that. In 2 Peter chapter 3, we see Peter again talking about this flood and God's patience while he was waiting, and then God's patience wearing out. And he makes this decision beginning in verse 3, 2 Peter 3 in verse 3. Know this first of all, that in the last days mockers will come with their mocking, following after their own lust, saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all continues as it was from the same. For when they maintain this, it escapes their notice that by the word of God the heavens existed long ago, and the earth was formed out of water and by water, through which the world at that time was destroyed, being flooded with water. Now look at this for a moment, and I want you to think about what he's saying. In verse 3, he says, know this first of all, Peter, that in your lifetime there are people who are mocking God. They're laughing, they're joking about God because they make a mistake. And the mistake is, well, since our fathers lived, things have always been as they were the same. It's been a long period of time. So somehow the time delay was what Peter used as his reason for why they didn't get the fact that, well, you missed something. Ever since our fathers fell asleep, time has always been the same. And Peter says, you're missing something real big. You see, ever since Adam and Eve, if you want to go back to your father, things have not always been the same. You see, there was an event right in here, and that event was called the flood. But because things had gone a long time, then there was a belief that, and people were laughing and joking about the fact that God's going to actually destroy the world again. I would tell you, if by the time Peter's writing this, this has been 2,000 years, and now you and I have been another 2,000 years, what do you think's happening now in the world around us? Do you think anybody really remembers that God's already destroyed the world one time? So what Peter's pointing out is the time lag was the issue. He says, beginning in verse 7, but the present heavens and earth by his word are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and the destruction of ungodly men. That's what it was all about. But do not let this one fact escape your notice, beloved, that with the Lord a day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as a day. God doesn't have a watch, and he doesn't have a calendar. That's what that says. A day doesn't make any difference to him at all. But the Lord is not slack about his promise, as some count slackness, but is patient toward you, not willing that any should perish, but all should come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. Now, in this concept, what you see is God was waiting. That's what Peter says in 1 Peter 3. He waited 120 years from the time he told Noah, I'm going to destroy the world. But eventually, his patience wears out. And that's why you see in 2 Peter chapter 3, he's saying he was patient. His patience wore out. And that's what the flood was all about. In Genesis chapter 11, there's an interesting story that I want to talk about for just a moment. What happens when God determines that people are not listening to him? They're not paying attention. Do you know in Genesis chapter 1, God said to Adam and Eve, you be fruitful and multiply and replenish or fill the earth. Now that was God's plan from the very beginning of time. Do you know that after the flood, you can look in chapter 9 and verse 1. So in the latter part of chapter 8, Noah and his family, when they get off the ark, they build an altar and they worship God. And the first command they were given in chapter 9 and verse 1 was, God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. That was God's plan. In the 11th chapter, however, human beings came up with another plan that they liked better. And this was their plan. In the 11th chapter, beginning in verse 2, it came about as they journeyed east and they settled in a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us build bricks and burn them thoroughly and use these bricks for stone, and they used tar for mortar. Now, I would tell you that probably burning bricks like this was something that was pretty new. They may have been amongst the first. But they came up with this plan because they needed strong bricks to build a tower that would go all the way into heaven. And verse 4, come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach heaven, and let us make for ourselves a name, lest we be scattered over the face of the whole earth. So human beings decided at some point in time, we do not want to just fill the earth and spread out. We rather want to do two things. We want to build this massive tower that'll go all the way to heaven, and we will make a name for ourselves. We'll be somebody special. If you study much about this, the idea was it was something that could be seen for many miles around. It would even become a navigation point. I don't know if they really thought that they could build a tower where they could just walk right up into heaven and see God. Now that would be the ultimate of stupidity, wouldn't it? But they had a different plan, and the plan was we're going to build a tower that reaches to heaven and we're going to make a name for ourselves. This was something that was absolutely different than what God wanted them to do. But verse 5, the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. It was built. It was well underway or done. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they have the same language, and this is what they began to do. And nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. Now, I've looked at this passage and studied it many times. Can you imagine God saying to any human being, they built this tower, and when they're of one mind and speak one language, anything they think they want to do, they can do it. How hard was it for God to blow this whole thing to pieces? Anybody know what he did? The Tower of Babel came from a particular place. When you hear somebody speaking Chinese or speaking Arabic, you think they're babbling. But maybe somebody else that speaks the same language would disagree with you. All God did was, in verse 7, come let us go down and confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. That's what it took. And look at the next verse. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore it was called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of the whole earth. From there scattered them abroad the face of the earth. It was going to happen. They were going to do what God wanted them to do, whether they wanted to or not. And so they had a plan. We're going to build, we're going to make a name for ourselves. Look at this thing we built. And people will say, much maybe like they would years later about Solomon, about his wisdom, they'll talk about us. And God said, no, it's not my plan. And he fixed it because of it. In the 19th chapter of the book of Genesis, you remember there was a great story in the 18th chapter where God said at that time to Abraham, he says, I'm going to destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Two massive cities. Multiple days' journey walking across the cities. They had to be miles across them. And God said, I'm going to destroy them. And Abraham said, please, don't do that, don't do that. So God worked something out with Abraham, and you remember the story. I'm not going to go into it. But in verse 24 of chapter 18, suppose there were 50 righteous within the city. I feel sure that Abraham didn't have a clue how many righteous people they were. Maybe he could be God's judge. But God says, all right, you think you can find 50 people? Go find 50 people. I did a lesson a few years ago, and I talked about it's all about numbers. And I talked about how many times when you see God making a decision to do something, it was about numbers. Now, I'm sure God was saying, now, this is going to be a foolish trick, but it's going to be something that Abraham will learn from. All right, Abraham, go ahead. Take a trip through both of these cities. Find 50 people. What did Abraham find? He wasn't even close. He comes back, what about 45? What about 40? All the way down to 10. God finally says, if you can find 10 righteous people, in verse 32, he said, oh, may the Lord not be angry, and I'll speak with the only once, the, only this once. Suppose 10 are found, and he said, I will not destroy it on the account of 10 people. As Jesus talked about Christians in the Sermon on the Mount, and he says, you are salt and light. You are what preserves the world. Do you know that 10 righteous people, had there been enough salt and light for God to look and see there were 10 righteous people, he would never have destroyed those two cities. It was about numbers in this case. But you know the story very well, and because of it, God destroyed this nation of people. Now, these are examples of when God's patience wears out. And God said, this is what I expect you to do. And you're either going to do it, or I'm going to take care of things. That's what you see in this regard. I want to start looking at the book of Exodus, the 14th chapter. And I want to do a case study with you, a piece-by-piece study of what does it look like when God gets a little peeved. When God says, I'm not happy, I'm really not happy. When God says, I've had enough. Now I can tell you, by the fourth quarter, Lord willing, we're going to be studying the book of Isaiah. And in the book of Isaiah, there are many nations that God got, his patience wore out and he destroyed them. But there is no case that I know of where we have the volume of information about this case study in the patience of God that we see here. In Exodus chapter 14, I want you to begin thinking about this for just a moment. God had heard the cries of his people. And so he comes to Moses in the third and fourth chapter, and he says, you're going to go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. I'm going to save these people. So what you have happen is a series of 10 plagues, the 10th of which was phenomenal. It was in the 12th chapter. That was the death of the firstborn. Now, that, if there was anything in the world that it was shown the power of God, it was the fact that every single household where they had killed a lamb and poured the blood of the lamb into a basin and taken a hyssop bush, a little bush, and taken that blood and marked it over the top of their door. And God said to them, don't go outside your door. Stay inside, because the blood over the door is going to be what saves you. Do you know when you read the word Passover today, that's where it came from. We have a song that we sing that says, when I see the blood, I will pass over you. Do you know that every single household, it might have been next door or across the street, when the angel of the Lord passed over, if there was not blood over their door, every firstborn human being and animal was destroyed. Now, because of that, Pharaoh was directly affected. His own household. So he makes the decision to let the children of Israel go. The children of Israel had been in slavery for 400 years, 430 years. They were not warriors. And so God, when you think about the Sinai Peninsula, we talked about this a while back in Exodus chapter 13, where God said, I'm going to lead the people not by the land, this direction, but by the sea. Because his fear was that when they would see war, the nation of Midian, that we're going to talk about tonight in Judges 6, the nation of Midian and the nation of Amalek were up here. And so God brought them down here. This is where Mount Sinai is. He didn't want them to go to war. He didn't at that point in time because they were not accustomed to it. So when God brings them out and they begin coming upon the Red Sea right over here. Here is Egypt over here. And as they get ready to cross the Red Sea is where we are in the 14th chapter. In chapter 14 and verse 10. Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. And the sons of Israel cried to the Lord, and they said to Moses, it is because there were no graves in Egypt that you've taken us out to die in this wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out to Egypt? Is it not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Now, just after, the day before, they had seen the firstborn of every Egyptian family, animal and human, destroyed by God. They're walking out like they had won a war and they couldn't have beaten anybody. And the first thing that happens when they hear the chariots coming behind them and they see the water is, we want to go back, we want to go back, we want to be slaves again. How did God handle that? In verse 13, Moses said to the people, do not fear, stand and see the salvation of the Lord that he has accomplished for you today, for the Egyptians whom you have seen today. Verse 13, you will never see them again. They're not crossing this Red Sea with us. And the Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. And the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. How did God handle this? God was not unhappy with the people. He felt like, well, they're basically new to this and they should have seen my power, but yet they don't get it yet. That's okay, that's okay. I'll have some patience with them. But to Moses, he's saying, why are you crying at me? You're supposed to be the leader. I told you to be the leader. You get out and do what you need to do. And you understand what happened on that story. In verse 15, you can see as he put his rod out and the Red Sea crossed, and they walked across on dry land, and as the Egyptians came with all of their chariots and they entered into the water crushed them. The next chapter is a song called the Song of Moses. We have several songs in our book that say, sing the song of Moses and the Lamb by and by. I will tell you, when you look at the story, this song that Moses' sister taught them, it was about the chariots that were laying dead and all of the helmets and spears and all the horses that lay dead all around the Red Sea. But God was not unhappy with the people because they were new. They were what we might call new converts or babes in Christ. In the 15th chapter, in verse 22, the second time there was an issue. In chapter 15 and verse 22, Moses led led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went with the wilderness of Shur, and they were 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. In verse 24, the people grumbled at Moses, saying, what shall we drink? And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And he threw it in the water, and the water became sweet. And he made for them a statute and regulation, and there he tested them. So he makes this regulation with Moses. But the people turn to Moses. What are we supposed to do? It's amazing. Deuteronomy chapter 8. One of Moses' last things that he told the children of Israel. He laid out all of these things that happened. And he said to the people, your fathers never got this, but generation number two, I hope you do. God didn't forget. He wasn't weak. He did all of this to test you. All of this was done to test you. In verse 25, you can see where he made statutes there. And taking a look at the 16th chapter, in verse 2 beginning, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness, and the sons of Israel said to them, would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by pots of meat and we ate the bread to the full. Isn't it interesting how I have a feeling that their memories were not exactly accurate? Isn't it amazing sometimes when we are sort of hyperventilating about something and we say, oh, I can remember, I had it so good in my former life. I doubt that they just sat around eating pots of meat all they wanted. Verse 4, the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven on you that the people may go out and gather a day's portion every day that I may test them whether or not they will walk in my instructions. And it came about on the sixth day that they will prepare what they bring in. It will be twice as much as they gather daily. So you can see in verse 17 and 18 that begins. In verses 7 through 9, the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumbling against the Lord. What are we that you should grumble against us? And Moses said, this will happen, that the Lord will give you meat to eat in the evening time and bread to the full in the morning, for the Lord hears your grumbling. Now, the point I want to make is, how many times early on God was not angry with them? He says, this is now the third time that they grumbled against Moses, and God says, tell them, we'll take care of them, we'll feed them. I hear your grumbling, I hear your complaining, I'm going to take care of you. Do you think that's going to last forever? You think God will do that for the next 40 years? So what you see in verse 11 and 12, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I have heard the grumblings of the sons of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight you shall eat meat, in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. Look a little bit further now as we look in the 17th chapter, beginning in verse 2. So I want you to watch this. Watch the progression of how God handles Moses. How does God handle the people as this moves from event to event? In 17 and 2, therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirsted for water, and they grumbled against Moses and saying, why now have you brought us up from the land of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord saying, what shall I do with these people? A little more and they will stone me to death. And the Lord said to Moses, pass before the people, take some of you, the elders with you, and take your staff, and you shall strike the Nile and say, before I stand before you there on this rock of Horeb, you shall strike the rock and the water shall come out, the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders. And he named the place Massah and Meribah, because the quarrel of the sons of Israel, because they had tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? But again, in this text now, this is four times as I would count it, there's no indication that God's angry with them. He's not even angry with Moses. He's just saying, okay, all right, this is what you want. I'm going to test you a little bit. I want to see how you react. I want to see how you respond to problems in your life. And then he fixed it. When you look a little bit further now, by the time we get to the 32nd chapter, and this is only maybe a month's time, this entire trip from the Red Sea to here was approximately 3 months. So when they reached Mount Sinai here from crossing the Red Sea was about a 90-day period of time. So this was not a long period of time. In chapter 32, beginning in verse 7, 32 and 7, the Lord spoke to Moses, go down. Now, Moses is now up on the mountain. He is with God, and God is seeing what's taking place down here. And he says in verse 7, The Lord spoke to Moses, go down at once, for your people that you have brought up from the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They quickly turned aside from my way, and as I have commanded them, they made for themselves molten calves and worshipped it and have sacrificed it and said, this is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people. This is the first time, I will tell you, that you see anything like that. God saying to Moses, you need to get down and take care of your people. I'm figuring out they are obstinate, hard-headed people. When you begin taking a look at verses 30 through 34. It came about the next day that Moses said to the people, you yourselves have committed the great sin. This is when he threw the tablets down, you remember, and he ground up the golden calf and he put it in their water and he made them drink it. And this is what he says afterward in verse 30. It came about the next day that Moses said to the people, you yourselves have committed a great sin. And now that I'm going up to the Lord, perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. And Moses returned to the Lord and said, alas, this people has committed a great sin. They have made a god of gold for themselves. But now if thou wilt forgive their sins, and if not, please blot me out from thy book which thou hast written. Do you know multiple times Moses will beg with God, beg God, please don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. This is the only time that I can see that Moses said, take my name out of the book of life. If you will let me be a sacrifice for the people, I'm willing to die. You remove my name from the book and just leave them alone. Now, I will tell you, multiple times God listened to Moses. And verse 34, but now go lead the people where I told you. Verse 33, the Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of the book. You're not going to be the perpetuation for all of these people. As Brother Owen talked about Jesus Christ, he was not going to allow Moses to do that. And so he told Moses, you go straighten the people out and move ahead. Numbers chapter 11. So the book of Numbers is a sequel to the book of Exodus. They back up to one another. And again, I will tell you that from here, they spend approximately 9 months down here basically building the tabernacle, building all of the table of showbread, the Ark of the Covenant, the candles, and then they make the trip up here where the spies are sent out. So from this period of time, again, was something around 3 to 4 months until the spies are sent out. We'll see that in just a moment. In Numbers chapter 11, the people became like those who complained of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. When the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burst amongst them, and they consumed some on the outskirts. And the people therefore cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died out. And the Lord named the place Taberah, because of the fire of the Lord burnt against them. So this is the first time God said, I'm tired. I'm going to give them a little taste. So he sends fire from heaven and burns the outside of the camp. And some people died as he was doing that. And you're beginning to see now, in something around a year's time, from the time they crossed the Red Sea, all of a sudden God is now reacting. He's already said they're an obstinate people. And I'm getting a little frustrated with this. Some of you parents can probably relate to this. In chapter 11, verse 16, therefore the Lord said to Moses, gather me 70 men from the elders that you know of the people and their offices, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them take their stand with you. Then I will come down and speak to you, and I will take the Spirit upon you and will put him upon them, and they shall bear the burdens of the people. This is where God is now wanting Moses to spread out some of the power. Verse 19, you shall eat not one. Verse 18, the people said, the latter part of verse 18, we were well off in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat it. You shall not eat 1 day, nor 2 days, verse 19 says, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but a whole month until it comes out your nostrils. and becomes loathsome to the point that you can't stand it. You've eaten so much meat, you can't stand it. To you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you, and you have wept before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? Now you're beginning to see God's attitude change. You want to eat meat? You want to eat meat? I'll give you meat until it's running out your nostrils. I will send meat down. Do you know that the text says that quail fell from the sky until it was waist high and rotted in the fields? And he said to them, it's going to become loathsome to you. You want it? This is what you want? I'll give it to you. In Numbers chapter 14, things changed. Things changed a lot when the children of Israel got just outside the land of Canaan. They selected the 12 spies and they sent the 12 spies in. And when the 12 spies came back, 10 of them said, there's no way we can take these people. They're huge people. The sons of Anak were there. The cities are fortified. There's no way we can take the people. I will tell you, when that event happened, God said enough. He said enough. In Numbers chapter 14, verses 1 through 4, the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses because the people came back and said, we can't do it. We can't do it. We came all this way through the wilderness. We haven't had the food like we had in Egypt and the water. And we get here and we can't even do it. In verse 2, the whole sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness. And why is the Lord bringing us to this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? Do you know that in the next chapter, God's going to say, you remember the children you were so worried about? You're so concerned about your children being plundered? Let me tell you what's going to happen. You're all going to be plundered. They'll be just fine. I'll take care of them. Now, he's going to bring this back to them a bit later. In 11 and 12, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, how long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me despite all of the signs that I perform in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they. But Moses said to the Lord, then the Egyptians will hear of it, and by thy strength and thy power, thou didst not bring them up from thy midst. And they will tell the inhabitants of the land. So Moses comes in and he pleads with God. So God says, all right, this is what I'm going to do. Instead of killing them all right here, everyone that was above 20 years of age and a male is going to die in this wilderness. You're going to go around in circles until every last one of you, 20 years of age and above, dies in the wilderness. 20 years of age is because when they crossed, you see the numbering, those who could fight, 20-year-old young men that could fight were given a parcel of land. And so everybody that was 20 and plus years of age would die in the wilderness because of two events. I won't go into that now. Who do you think was the last person that died before they blew the trumpet and they started moving across the Jordan River? Who was the last person? Moses. Moses was the last. He was not allowed to cross because when he made the statement, he struck the rock and he said, how long shall we draw water for you rebels? But he didn't behave himself the way God thought he should in this text. And so it was Moses who was the last one to die. It was this event that changed everything. And God said, you will never see the land that I promised you. I promised it to Abraham. I promised it to Isaac. I promised it to Jacob. Right on down. But you, this generation, you will never see it. And they did not see it. In chapter 14, verse 26, 14 and 26, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation grumbling against me? He didn't talk like that the first five or six or seven times that they disobeyed him or they complained. I have heard, verse 27, the complaints of the sons of Israel, which they are making against me. Say to them, as I live, saith the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so this I will do. We wish we had died in the wilderness. God said, I can take care of that. I'll take care of that for you. He says, verse 29, your corpses shall fall in the wilderness, even all your numbered men, according to you, your complete number from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me. Surely you shall not come in the land which I swore to settle you, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they shall know the land that you have rejected. But as for you, your corpses will fall in the wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and you shall suffer for your unfaithfulness until your corpses lie in the wilderness. According to the number of days which you have spied out the land, 40 days, even so you shall give a guilt year, even 40 years you shall be my opposition. If you look a little bit further, things went downhill in a hurry from there. Korah, who was a cousin, second, third, fourth cousin, he was part of, when you think about Levi, had three sons. And from them, the Kohathites, one of his sons, Merari, Gershom, but the sons of Kohath were the priesthood. So this man, who the ground opened up and swallowed him and all of his kinfolks, he comes to Moses and he says, I want God to tell me why I'm not as powerful as you are. And Moses comes and prays to God. And Moses comes back to him and he says, be out in front of your tent tomorrow morning. Come on out. God's going to show who his pick is. And he had said to Moses, get the people away. Get them back. Get them away. The ground opened up. And fire came out and they consumed him and 250 men and all of his belongings and sucked them into the ground, and the ground closed back up. He'd had enough. God had had enough. I will tell you, when you look at the plague that God had promised them, I will place a plague on you because of the way the spies handled it. In chapter 16... Verse 41, the next day the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses, even after he had just sucked 250 people into the pit with fire. The next day they complained. In verse 45, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, get away from the congregation that I may consume them instantly. They fell on their faces, and Moses and Aaron, take your censers and put it in the fire of the altar and lay incense on it and bring them out quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them. For the wrath has gone forth from the Lord. The plague has begun. Aaron took it as Moses had spoken and ran into the midst of the assembly, for behold, the plague had begun amongst the people. This was the pestilence, the disease that we were talking about earlier. He put incense and made atonement for the people, and he took his stand between the dead and the living. Could you imagine 2 million people, and people are dropping dead, and Moses comes out and Aaron with their fire censers, and they're standing between the ones that are already dead and the ones that are still alive, and they're trying to get enough incense to God that it would soothe his anger. In verse 48, he took his stand between the dead and the living, so the plague was checked, but those who died by the plague were 14,700, besides those who died on the account of Korah, which were another 250. The fiery serpents. Now what I'm going to tell you is this. When you just study this, and we went through in about a half hour's time, story after story after story, isn't it amazing? Much like you would be with a child or a grandchild you're raising, where you say, okay, well, he's only 2 years old. She's only 3 years old, and she'll have to learn this. Well, they're only 6 years old now, so I'm going to be patient with them, and I'm going to teach them. But at some point in time, you get frustrated. And your frustration starts coming out. And then you get angrier, and you get angrier. And then eventually you say, I've had enough. Now, I hope the correlation doesn't go beyond that. Hopefully none of you have killed your children. But God killed millions. He killed millions in the wilderness. Now, look at this for just a moment. God had promised them that they would have the land. Do you know that these people who died in the wilderness were promised the land by their descendants, all the way back to the time of Abraham? Joshua 21 says it was all given to them. It just wasn't given to this generation. It was given to the next generation. And that was completely fulfilled. Genesis 15, the people that were there, we've talked before, God was driving, allowing this nation to become more immoral and iniquitous. And eventually, when their iniquity was fulfilled, God brought in these people, the ones that lived, that were under 20 years of age, and took over the land and killed the people that were there already, the Amorite nation. In verse 13 of the book of Acts, this is a great speech that the Apostle Paul gives. He says this, and when God had destroyed the seven nations, these are the nations that are up here. You can read about those in Genesis 16. And in Canaan, he distributed the land as an inheritance. God determined when these things happen. In Acts chapter 17, when the Apostle Paul was on the Areopagus on Mars Hill, he said that God determines the times and the boundaries of the habitations of the nations. God determines when people will be taken off the land. God controls the land. This ball of dirt that we live on, that we think is ours, and we can control it, God makes it very clear, I own the land. I'll let you know when you can have it, and I'll let you know when it's time for me to take you off of it. In looking at this, I'm going to say to you, this ought to help you understand a case study. And I'm going to tell you that everything that we talked about took place in considerably less than 18 months. More like about 16 months' time. This is not 50 years. This is less than a year and a half. And what you see is, piece by piece by piece, you see God's attitude changing, don't you? You see how He dealt with things changing. Now you might say, well, what difference does that make to us today? I'm going to give you two passages to think about. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, do you know that the Apostle Paul uses many of the exact stories that we just talked about to make a point? And here's the point. Now, these are not random. These are the actual stories that we just went through. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning in verse 5, nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. That's the generation that died. Nor crave these things as example for us that we should not crave as they craved. And do not be idolaters as some of them. This is in the time of the golden calf. Nor act immorally as some of them did. You see that in Numbers chapter 25. Nor let us try the Lord as some of them did, and they were destroyed by the serpents. Numbers 21. Nor grumble as some of them did, and they were destroyed by the destroyer. That verse is Numbers 16, 41. Look at verse 11. These things happen to them as an example, and they are written for our instruction. Not things in general. The specific stories that we're talking about were written for us. For our instruction upon the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken one, but is such as is common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape to you, you will be able to endure it. In the 11th verse, you see the same thing. Why does this matter to us? These stories the Apostle Paul put to the Corinthians. Do you know that the next chapter over, 1 Corinthians 11, is where he says to them, When you come together, it's for the worse. It's not for the better. When you come together, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper. For one of you eating, the other drinking, the other one's asleep, the other drunk. So he begins talking about the church in Corinth. But he started this out by saying, I'm going to tell you a story of the patience of God and what it looks like when God's patience wears thin and then wears out. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, these things were written, the things aforetime, for our perseverance and encouragement. Do you think God has unlimited patience with you? Do you think God has unlimited patience with any human being? When we say, well, I'm not ready right now to get my life right. I'm not ready to get straight. I've got something that I want to hold on to that's kind of my thing. I want to hold on to it. Nobody knows about it. It's just my thing that I do. And one of these days I'll open my hand and I'll give it up to God. Is your time unlimited? Don't think lightly, Peter says, of the patience of God. Don't try God. That's why James says, well, what is your life? Your life is but a vapor that's here. You're here for a little while and then it vanishes away. Better you should say, if the Lord wills, we will do this and that. As such, as you're doing it, he says, you boast in arrogance, thinking that you have tomorrow to live, and thinking that even if you are alive, God's patience will just be with you as long as you need it. Thank you for listening to me. We have a song that Brother Charles is going to lead us in that will be our song of encouragement for the day. I hope if there's anyone here that feels like you may be testing God's patience in your life, you'll give serious thought to what we talked about today. This to me ought to be an encouragement to you that God takes care of his people, but his patience is not unlimited. If you need to respond in any way, let it be known as we stand and sing. God's calling you.